This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Gil Alexander of A Numbers Game of Beeson will join us. We will go over some Major League Baseball, some Wimbledon, maybe see if he's bet anything in the NFL yet, as we are about a month away here from the Hall of Fame game. Less than a month away, I think a month to the day, really, to the Hall of Fame game at the end of July this year between the Lions and the Chargers, so getting close to football. But I'll start with baseball, and I ended the show on Friday saying, you know what, the Mets won two in a row against Atlanta. Maybe they stem the tide. Maybe they're getting back on track. That was not the case. They got buried, absolutely buried this weekend in Pittsburgh, and lost all three games by a combined score of 30-3, 30-4. I mean, they got absolutely destroyed at a team meeting on Saturday night, Sunday morning, after the second game. That didn't help. So the Mets, it has been ugly here for the New York Mets. And to me, now you have to have some major concern. The pitching is falling apart. They got a bunch of injuries. The bottom of the lineup hasn't been good. Philly right now, minus 130 to win the division. I could completely understand if you decided to take a chance on the Phillies to win that division and just said, you know what, this Mets team is doesn't have it. I still think they have a run in them. I still think this will be a close race till the end here. I really do. Mets plus 110, Braves 22-1. Are they letting the Braves hang around enough? I don't know. If I'm the Mets, though, I got to get some more pitching. I got to get some infusion of young arms. They've got these two guys in the minors, Tongs and Sprout. Sprout actually saw pitch in Double A last year against Hartford. Sprout has really good stuff. And Tongs has strikeout numbers, like 14 Ks per night. He's got video game type strikeout numbers. I would give these guys a shot. Enough of the Paul Blackburns of the world. These guys are just not getting it done, a lot of them. Now, part of it's the Tsang injury, the McGill injury. Now, Canning has been great recently, but the bottom line, you got to get more arms. You got to get more live arms here. If you want to be positive about the Mets, this time last year, the Yankees lost 23 out of 33. They had a 10-23 stretch. They rebounded. They won the division. They won the division pretty comfortably, and they went to the World Series. I think the Mets will generally be okay, but as far as the number right now, Phillies minus 130 to win the division, I think is probably a pretty good bet. They just feel more stable. They get Wheeler every fifth day. You know, Sanchez is good. Suarez is good. Mick Abel's been decent. Nola's coming back. They've got enough power in the lineup. Lineup hasn't been as good this year. Some of those guys are having down years. But I think, even though I still think it's coming down to the wire, I could completely understand here taking a shot on Philly minus 130 to win the division. Yankees get back on track, win two out of three, score a bunch of runs on Sunday, beat up the A's, you know, 1-3-0 on Friday, a game that I was at. That was first time since 2018 being at Yankee Stadium. It was actually pretty cool. The winter they didn't sign Harper and Machado. I just said, you know what, they charge too much money. I'm not going there. If they're gonna act like a small market team in free agency, and they're not gonna sign Harper and Machado, and they're gonna, you know, and the list goes on of guys they haven't signed over the years, Freddie Freeman. They weren't in on Ohtani. You could say Ohtani want to go there. There's always excuses why they sign these guys. I was just, you know what? I'm not going to go. I don't need to spend that kind of money. They piss me off how they run their team. But you know, my kids are at an age now where they want to go or have an interest in going, and I didn't want to deprive them. So went in, and it was actually pretty cool. And as soon as we walk in, I think one of the guys, I don't know if he worked there or whatever, he said, "Is this their first time?" And I said, "Yes." And he goes, "I could tell by the looks on their faces." So that was cool. And it's Yankee Stadium. I missed being there. It's not the same as the old stadium. It's not the same vibe. It's not the same. It's just not that, you know, it's not the old Yankee Stadium, but still have the white fencing on top of the stadium. It's still, you know, there's still the atmosphere that Yankee Stadium provides. So it was fun. And what jumped out to me was, man, the size of these players in person. I don't think it does justice, you know, on TV, because we're watching and just watching batting practice, watching all the warm-ups. LeMahieu, for a guy that can't hit the ball out of the infield, LeMahieu is a monster. You know, Stanton is big. The A's had a bunch of guys. Kurt's the first baseman. He's like 6'4", 6'5". So I don't think TV does justice just to how big these guys are. But it was fun. It was fun to go. And the Yankees are back on track here, 1-2 out of 3. I generally think they'll be fine. Tampa right now has made it a race. Tampa's got good pitching. They're a good organization. They just always do more with less, as we talked about. But I think the Yankees have enough in the rotation. They got some holes in the lineup. LeMahieu, they got a black hole at second base, and maybe enough hasn't been made about the fact that they have a black hole at second base, and they let Gleyber Torres walk out the door. Now he's playing for the Tigers, another contender here. But look, Torres, he had kind of worn out his welcome, not running the defense, the base running. Can't crush him for losing Torres, although it does look bad now that he's playing really well. And the Yankees, certainly need to fill that position. Well, Mayhew was at this point of his career is just not the answer. But Yankees, I think, will be fine. And they are in a series this weekend. They will play the series this weekend against the Mets in a Subway Series. Those series have a lot of juice, so that will be fun. I look forward to those. Those are exciting. 4th of July weekend, it's a good time for it. I'm glad you play all six games. They went to a format here recently where they only played four games all year against the Mets, 2-2. Now we're back to the 3-3 with the Yankees winning two out of three in Yankee Stadium about a month, 6 weeks ago. So excited for that series this week, and we will see how that plays out. Yankees play the Blue Jays this week. They started on Monday. I was going to look at the Monday card here. Padres Phillies is interesting. Wheeler on the mound, -210 favorites. Yankees are -156 with Rodon going. Blue Jays haven't announced the pitcher. Burns going against the Red Sox. This is going to be a fun pitching matchup. I'll go under the eight Burns, Reds, and Red Sox to give you a play here on Monday. Burns has been outstanding. I can understand if you want to go first five to just avoid the bullpens. Burns probably not going to give you much length, but boy, if you haven't seen this kid and you live in the area here where you can watch the Red Sox, you have a way to watch it. Watch this because Burns was absolutely outstanding. The first couple innings against the Yankees, the final line wasn't as indicative of how he pitched, but he was great, from that point forward. Struck out the first six guys he faced, the first six guys in two innings. So him against Crochet, under eight, under probably four in the first five. That to me is a play. So that's a game to watch here as we hit the summer. I think I mentioned on the pod. I get confused sometimes what I mentioned on the pod and what I mentioned on the other shows. Under 9.5 wins for June for the Rockies, if you bet that like I did. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. First of all, they had nine about a week ago, so maybe he didn't deserve to win. They lose every game since. They head into the final game. They don't play on Monday, so this was it. Sunday against the Brewers. They're down 2-0 in the eighth. They get a run. Okay. 2-1 in the ninth. 7-8, 9 up. 7 out. 8 out. The ninth guy go up. Ninth guy is up. It's Arcia. And he hits a curveball out for a home run to tie it at two. Even after that, you're the Brewers. All right, you get the bottom of the ninth. They don't score there. They had a ball just go foul. I can't remember if it was in the ninth or an extra innings. Just go foul with two on. They stole second with one out. The ball trickled in the outfield. The guy, Turan, could have gone to third. He didn't. Then eventually, I mean, you know how it goes. The Rockies scratch across the run in the 11th. The Brewers strike out a couple times looking and then fly out to end the game. And the Rockies win their 10th game of June. Just horrific, horrific fashion. Just an all-time bad beat. And if you had the intuition to say, I got the Rockies under 9.5. You know what? Let me take the Rockies plus a run and a half or plus 2.5. You were sitting there with the middle with one out to go and you couldn't get home. So that's an absolutely crushing loss if you had that. But that's baseball, Susan, as they say. So Mets not playing well. It's just a disastrous series. Disastrous series in Pittsburgh. I think they'll be okay, but you have to have some concern about them. Yankees bouncing back, and we will keep an eye on baseball, start to do a lot more baseball here as the summer has arrived. And we'll talk some baseball next. Gil Alexander will get his thoughts on the series, Wimbledon, maybe some football. That is next. This is a Should a Bit More podcast. All right, we are back. Should a Bit More podcast. And he rejoins us once again. You can catch him on a numbers game, weekdays 10 to 12 Eastern, the Beating the Book Megapod, one of our favorite guests. And he's here, the great Gil Alexander. Gilly, happy summer, man. We're past basketball, not quite football. How is your summer going? You like this time of the year?
It's a beautiful time of the year because it is a 50-degree difference between the inferno that is Las Vegas and some spots in California. So, for those of us who are California snobby, it's a good time of year to come back during the weekends. And dogs fighting each other in the background, that kind of thing. No, it's a beautiful time of year, but Vegas is an inferno. Last year we had 20 straight days of 115 degrees and higher, which is insanity. But in terms of like sports betting, there's Wimbledon, there's golf majors, and there's baseball every day. So it's a nice break because we know what's coming.
I agree. We are 2 weeks into the Rafael Devers era in the with the San Francisco Giants. You're a Giants guy. It has not gone well. They can't hit. They don't have anything, outside of Devers too. What's been your take here in the first couple of weeks of Devers and just the direction of the Giants?
Yeah, I mean, I think Devers has been fine, but you're right. You do wonder, and I think every Giants fan or anybody observing baseball has had this in the back of their minds the entire first half of the season, which is, are the Giants really as good as the win percentage? Is this really sustainable? I think they're also, I mean, and I think the answer to that question is probably not because of that offense. The offense is not reliable. It always feels like it's a bit of smoke and mirrors. The only thing is, though, that you have that carrot at the end where you also feel like if they can get into the playoffs in a very crowded National League, we talked about this a little bit on the text exchange yesterday. The disparity, the difference between the NL and the AL is unbelievable this year. But if the Giants can get in the playoffs, that's not a rotation. Webb, Ray, Birdsong, with that bullpen that you really want to face. So I don't know, man. It's going to be, I think, like so much in baseball, it's going to come down to the last part of the season, maybe even the last week. I wonder if they're done before the trade deadline, which is looming at the end of July.
Who's the best team in baseball? Is there a great team in baseball?
The Dodgers are the best team. I hate to say it, just because. And by the way, they've had a sneaky great June for those of us who follow such things and have bets in that market. They've actually had a really good June. They're still the best team. Are they great? I mean, hard to tell with all the injuries and the pitching staff. I think their best team. The more appropriate question perhaps should be, who's the next best team? And I don't think that team resides in the American League. I think the Astros, with an 8-0 one run record in the month of June, you can't really believe that's sustainable. I'm still a Padres guy. I know a lot of people aren't. And there's a lot of people who are Diamondbacks people, but they've had so many injuries you can't tell. So I don't really know the answer to question number two at this point, because everybody's so inherently either flawed or you haven't seen them at full strength.
This time last year, for the most part, the Tigers and the Mets, they weren't on anybody's radar, especially the Tigers. Like into August, they were sellers at the trade deadline. Mets were one of the worst teams in baseball heading into June. June's where they got hot. What do you see a team like that? If you had to pick a team like that this year, that's right around 500, maybe under 500, that makes a run. I think the Braves would be a lot of people's answers, but man, they just every time they take one step forward, they take another couple steps back. And when you're 10 games under, you leave yourself such a slim margin for error. To go on the run you need to get to. That being said, do you think there's anyone that can make a run, Atlanta or otherwise?
Padres would be my pick, but they're a little above 500, so they might not really make count to the question you're asking. Braves are tantalizing. The Mariners are exactly what you described. Every time you think, oh, maybe it's the Mariners, right? Then they fall back. The Tigers are an interesting thing beyond your question because you just brought them up. They're kind of the opposite of the Giants to me. Like, do you feel like if you play them in the playoffs, that pitching scares you past Skubal? I
No.
don't know that it does. That's the thing. So that's the thing of baseball. You and I have discussed this so many times, which is, and we talk about it in basketball too, right? The regular season means nothing next to the postseason. That has a lot to do with load management and about players and shrinking rotation. In baseball, it's just, Billy Beane's famous line, 162 games, but my shiz doesn't work in the playoffs. And so when you play best of fives and best of sevens in baseball, can you really count on the way you manage the regular season working in shorter series? And so that's what makes it a complicated question, because to get to the playoffs is one thing. To then get beyond that, a run into the playoffs is a totally different animal.
What does your betting day-to-day baseball look like? You don't bet a lot of sides totals. I know you do the monthly bet sometimes. Do you have
Yeah.
futures or wars? What's your betting diet like?
I was in Spanky's up to the All-Star break contest. Like over 200 people were in this handicapping contest. All you could do was bet sides and totals full game. That was the stipulations. That was all you could do. Oh no, pardon me. You could also do first five sides and totals as well. So through 90 some games, I was betting all mine, and I was sore. I was like in the top seven or eight of that. And then Will, I just fell flat on my face. So at this very moment, heading into the All-Star break, I'm not doing much, but I'm doing a lot more first fives this year, despite the worst straddle than the full games. I find myself doing a lot of that. It worked splendidly with favorites early in the year. It has just crashed and burned since sort of mid-May.
Are we getting a classic MVP race here in the American League? If Cal, let me, I guess I'll phrase it this way. Should phrase it this way to begin with. Cal Raleigh needs to have what sort of stat line to win the MVP, barring some injury from Judge?
Yeah, we talked about it this week on the air because the night that Raleigh hit two home runs, 31 and 32, and everybody started going crazy about, oh, Judge, he may not win the MVP. And I think Judge went down to minus 2,500 and Raleigh went to 5-1. And the comment I made was, Raleigh's going to have 65 or 66 homers, and Judge is going to have to fall back to like 49 or 50 for this to really be a possibility, because voters love the long ball and they'll be influenced by that. Even though, like, if you look at slash lines, Judge dwarfs Raleigh's. Judge is still going to win. I had Mark Borchardt on that morning too. He's like, people should not be betting on Cal Raleigh, and I agree with him. It would take Raleigh to get historic, and it would take j something to happen to Judge.
Yeah, tend to agree with you. Wimbledon. Oh, last one on baseball. Did you any monthly bets? I know you probably don't want to give it up, but did you make one?
I didn't make one yet. That's part. So my job today is I have so many Wimbledon matches. Well, we'll get to Wimbledon here, but the difference between Wimbledon and, say, the French Open is the French Open spreads the first round into 3 days. Wimbledon doesn't do that. It's in 2 days. So there's so many matches you got to get through. But the other thing is I got to come up with a July bet, and I've glanced at it. And I will say this is the 10th month that we've done this. Since we did a 6 months of the regular season last year, and this is the fourth month of this year, this to me is the most random one of them all, because there is no great team that has, or as we just talked about, there's no very good team that has a really super easy schedule, in my opinion. The teams that have the easiest schedules are all teams that you would not like rush to bet, in any circumstance. You may be forced to, but I'm not sure I will. And July, with an all-star break, of course, makes it the shortest of all the months in terms of games played. So it's the most random just on that alone to begin with. So I will say this, the easiest schedules I see have to do with the NL Central teams. So like the Cardinals have an easy schedule. I believe the other one was the Brewers and the Cubs. Don't hold me to that, because I'm trying to remember when I looked at it 2 or 3 days ago. So I don't know if you're rushing to bet the St. Louis Cardinals for most wins in May, or excuse me, in July. But like, that's the kind of team, if you're looking at it through just the prism of schedule, that's the kind of team you'd have to back.
You know what we're looking at? What, the Astros and the Rays, as we're entering the final day of June as we record this, and it was a year ago. You were one day away from, it was that day. That's th this Sunday. You remember that, I'm sure. With the
Bro.
Astros winning, I forget what other events you needed to happen, but it was like a three-team parlay. You hit them all. It was a long rain delay with the Astros and the Mets, extra innings, and it got home. I know what clinched it was what the it was a Rangers Orioles Sunday night baseball game, and the Rangers just buried them. That's what you needed.
Buried him, that's right. And that was at a time when the Orioles were big favorites, I believe, in that game too, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong about that, but I remember the going into it thinking, this is, that'll never happen. That was amazing. That was one of those famous appearances on your, for some reason, I always, when I'm on your show, it's usually like just exhausted from some dramatic sporting event, the Nuggets getting eliminated or something like that. Yes, it is the Astros and the Rays. Those are the only two teams alive. The Astros have a one win advantage over the Rays here on the second to last day of June, but the Rays have one more game, and the run differential is super close also. So that's going to be interesting. I will say this though, if we look at the 9 month history of this, the first month I was one out away from cashing a 65-1, as you were as well. The second month, a game out. The third month, cashed with the Astros. The 6 months since then, Will, I don't think I've even been close on any of them.
It's tough. It's like hitting a golf out, right? You feel when you hit them, they feel good, but there's a lot of competition in these. I mean, a
It's a
lot
lot of
has to go
random,
right. A lot of them
a lot
right-handers,
of
yeah.
randomness.
Yeah. All right, Wimbledon, men side. We'll just start outrights. Alcaraz +120, Sinner 2-1. Is it as simple as one of those two, or does somebody else have a chance?
I mean, for me, it's Alcaraz. It's to me, it's as simple as one. I think Sinner's quarter's a lot harder than Alcaraz's, and I do think there's a possibility of an upset somewhere. But yes, generally speaking, you are correct. It is Alcaraz and Sinner. Some people allow for Djokovic to be in the conversation, for him to win his 25th major, and I believe it will be his eighth Wimbledon. I don't. but it is grass. Funny things happen. It's only a 5-week season. It's kind of you just some of one of these players or two of these players, you just they pick up a knack for grass over the course of a fortnight of over 2 weeks in Wimbledon, and you never know what can happen. But on the men's side, it's pretty top heavy. And Alcaraz has won the last two Wimbledons. I expect him to three-peat here.
Anything in the quarters for the men's?
This was the problem with the quarters on the men's side is I wanted to see where a guy like Alexander Bublik landed. But Bublik landed in a tough quarter with Joker and Draper. And I was like, okay, once I saw that, I'm like, all right, what number am I going to get on Alexander Bublik? Am I going to get 10 to 1? Am I going to get 9 to 1? Instead, it was only like plus 350. And there was a lot of that, like a couple players on the ladies' side too, where the numbers weren't nearly as good as I had wanted them to be. So no quarter. I made no futures bet on the men's side.
All right, the women's Sabalenka plus 260, Rybakina 6-1. Your girl Iga is 9-1. Any bet for the outrights there?
Iga 9-1, Maddie Keys 18-1 were my two plays on the ladies' side. Maddie Keys got a really favorable draw, I thought. Iga did not. Iga's in the same quarter as Elena Rybakina and Coco Gauff, arguably the two best players' grass court numbers over the last 2 years are most consistent. So the draw did her no favors. However, Iga just got to a grass final last week at Bad Homburg, and there is some speculation from people, even the two guys on my podcast, Drew Dinsick and Zach Cohen, on the Beating the Book podcast. I didn't come up with this, so people can't accuse me of like inventing some Iga narrative. They believe that her new coach was brought in just to make her good on grass and to sort of de-emphasize the other surfaces. I don't know, just to make him good on grass, but it was a big point of emphasis. And so if that's the case, it does then sort of start to explain why she had so much trouble here in the last stretch of time, the last half a year. And then why perhaps her clay performance was jankier in a way that it's never been before. I don't know if that's true, but I do think that what you've seen from her gives you the impression that a player of her caliber, and again, she is a five-time Grand Slam winner, and she just turned 24. She's pretty incredible. Like I said, I think she wins double-digit majors. I think she ends up being the GOAT. I think she's a good bet at that number.
Quarter winners for the women, anything?
No, because the numbers, first of all, I think there's a lot of Fugazi quarter short shots. Sabalenka's historical grass numbers are not good. She hasn't played a lot here. Jessie Pegula is kind of like, oh, well, you know, she's all right. She's, I guess, somewhat consistent on grass, but she shouldn't be a short shot. By the way, Mira Andreeva should not be a short shot in her quarter. She is not. She doesn't show nothing on grass before. I think if there's a quarter play, and I didn't make it, but Amanda Anisimova in her quarter, she has really good historical grass numbers. Grass is tricky with data because there's not as much of it to go on. But Anisimova at about plus 350 in her quarter is a good play to me.
Oh, wow. And I'm looking at the second quarter. DraftKings says plus 550.
There you go. Even better.
There you go. Individual match. You can go through these as quickly or as in detail as you want. How many do you have? What are your favorite ones?
Well, I've only gone through the men's side thoroughly. I haven't even released these yet. And the women's side I'm still doing because there's so many matches. But on the men's side, I narrowed it down to three, the juiciest of which is I'm taking Jacob Fearnley at about plus 170 over João Fonseca. João Fonseca is the next big thing in tennis, where Alcaraz and Sinner leave off. Here comes João Fonseca. But not on this surface. At least we haven't seen anything on this surface. And Fearnley should not be a plus 170 dog here. He should be way lower of a dog. So that's the big upset play for me. And remember, best of five and a slam on the men's side.
You remember when Wimbledon used to be on HBO? I remember as a kid growing up, like getting home from like summer camp or whatever, and HBO was one of the channels. Like, oh, you could watch a movie. It was things I liked, and it was always Wimbledon on all day on HBO. Do you remember that?
HBO had the weird boxing Wimbledon
yes.
sports thing going.
Yes.
Who did the tennis for HBO?
That I don't remember.
Yeah. Because Bud Collins and Dick Enberg were obviously NBC on the weekends. Yeah. Oh, my. Martina. Oh, my. That's all I remember.
That I don't remember. I just remember being on all summer. It was always on HBO. Gilly, this was awesome. Have you started betting football yet or no?
Not really. I mean, the only bet I made was I bet the Giants under season win total
I like
five and a
that one.
half. If they, dude, if they don't beat the Saints on October 5th, if you look at their
Oh,
schedule,
I know.
if they don't win that football game, and I know it's Russell Wilson, so you got to figure they cobble together a win or two that you don't expect. But there's a scenario where this is a disaster. If they don't win
Absolutely.
that game, it could go 0 for a long way.
The only caveat is it's the NFL, and we know that this team is good or that team is bad, and watch them come out. I know people think like Abdul Carter, their defense is going to be really good, and they might be better than people think. I have to see it to believe it. I'm with you.
Yeah, and I just did I was in that Survivor documentary part two that they that part of the second year of it that they just did, and I was looking over Survivor stats because this is always an indication of what you just talked about. The Survivor stats, the Circa Survivor stats, first 3 weeks, last 3 years. So 3 years ago, I want to get this right. 3 years ago, 74.7% of entries were knocked out in the first 3 weeks. So remember,
Wow.
that's just picking a winner, right? That's not even spreads. 74.7% knocked out first 3 weeks. 2 years ago, 64.3%, I believe it was, knocked out the first 3 weeks. And last year, 95.5% of survivor entries knocked out the first 3 weeks.
That's insane.
None of us knows shit, to
That
your
is
point.
insane. Not,
Yeah.
so almost 96% were gone after the first 3 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, that's historic. I don't know if that'll ever be matched again, but that the point
No.
of that is all 3 years you're talking about, two out of three or three out of four at least are gone of all entries.
And then it hit a low, I think, because no, it went from every underdog, big underdog, like winning outright the first 3 weeks, like you mentioned, and then like always all chalk pretty much from that point forward. It was very
That's right.
strange.
It got really stagnant. It was like a brand new game after week three.
Yeah. Gilly, a numbers game, 10 to 12, beating the book. Anything else we gotta know about?
No, man. What are you betting baseball daily still? Yes, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Every day.
So yeah, every day, every
Every
day.
day.
I like this time of the year. People complain it. This time of the year is, this is the slow time. The only time of the year that I really don't like is the couple weeks after the Super Bowl, before the conference tournaments. And part of that is, on the East Coast, it's cold. It gets dark early. This time of the year when you have baseball, I actually don't mind it.
The only thing I will say in closing, when I used to do baseball daily with Dr. Bob back in the day, the model worked great to the All-Star break, and then the 2 weeks after the All-Star break, it all went wacky before it reverted back to being good. So that would be my one cautionary tale is that is always the 2 weeks back from the All-Star break were always a little historically dicey for me. So I'll just throw that out there. I don't know if that still exists, but it just felt like some teams got back in full stride and others didn't.
Makes
And
sense.
same with pitchers.
Yeah, these bullpens get worn down. These pitching staffs get worn down for sure. Gilly,
Yeah.
appreciate the time, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you to Gil Alexander. Rate, review, subscribe. Be back Wednesday. Goldboys.com is the Discord. See you then.